Have you ever gotten on a note-taking kick when you're like listening to sermons and you write out all the main points? And then I've for a while I took notes. And have you ever looked back over the notes and you're like, what am I supposed to do with this? Because you realize the main points are like super generic. Like, you know, it's important to be people of the word. Yeah, it sounds good. You know, point number two, bring people to Jesus. Yeah. Love everyone with the everyone underlined. That sounds good. And you're like, what am I supposed to do with these notes? This all sounds like good stuff, but I feel like there was some detail in the sermon that I could use right now to know how to do those things. But for me, I grew up in church, and I've heard a lot of sermons that I've written a lot of notes. I stopped taking them because I'm like, I feel like I write the same thing down every time, and it's not the right thing to be writing down. And so I thought, wouldn't it be handy if we talked about what it means to practically follow Jesus, what it looks like to actually do what he did? And so we've been talking about how when you're following Jesus, this is more than just, oh, I'm part of a belief system, I attend a church, I'm part of this tribe, but it's I'm following Jesus, a real person who came to earth, became flesh, and has ascended to heaven, and now has sent his spirit to indwell us. So now we want to follow him. He's a teacher. He's more than just a savior. He's our savior too. We trust in him for our salvation, but he's also our leader, our teacher. And so what we want to do is, if you were following a teacher in first century Judea, you would be with him. You'd spend time with him. So we're looking at practices like Sabbath and solitude so that we can practice spending time with Jesus. Then you'd become like him. You'd do things, we call this spiritual formation. We do things to shape our heart or allow Jesus to shape our heart. And so practices like fasting and meditating on scripture are amazing tools for doing that. Did anyone try fasting this week? Did it go well? Is it all right? You unintentionally did? Well, did you meet Jesus in it? Always, there you go. So that helps us to shape our self, to take control of our bodies and put them in God's service. And finally, if you're going to follow Jesus, it's on one level pretty simple. You've got to do what he did. That's the whole point of following, is that you do what he did. And so that's what we're going to look at. Jesus did some pretty unusual things, I think you'd agree. There's not a whole lot of people walking around who did the things that Jesus did. He healed people, but he also served people. They had a fund where they would give people money when they would travel that were in need. And so Jesus would serve people in that way. He'd serve people through healing. He'd serve people in through feeding them. And then he did some really weird stuff. So I'm going to read out of John 13. We just had communion at the same dinner, right before Jesus said, "This is my body." He took off his cloak and he washed the disciples' feet. How weird is that? That's the job of a servant, to be clear. And so after Jesus washed their feet, he said this in verse 12. So when Jesus had washed their feet and put his outer clothing back on, he took his place at the table again and said to him, "Do you understand what I have done for you?" If I ever heard a loaded question, that would be it. He goes on, "You call me teacher and Lord, and you do so correctly because that's what I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you too ought to wash one another's feet. For I've given you an example. You should do just as I have done for you. I tell you the solemn truth, the slave is not greater than the master, nor is the one who sent as a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you understand these things, you will be blessed if you do him." Do you understand what I've done for you? So this is not a one-time thing. This was a very dramatic example that Jesus obviously wanted to stick in his disciples' minds so they didn't miss the point. But he actually was demonstrating his entire purpose in coming to earth. In Matthew 20, verse 25, he says, But Jesus called them and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those in high positions use their authority over them. It must not be this way among you. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first among you must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus' act of service didn't stop at feet washing or feeding the 5,000, but he gave his very life for us as a ransom. And so if we're going to follow Jesus, that's the model we have. That's the spiritual practice. That's putting into practice our faith. That's putting into practice our actions. Because he called his disciples to carry on that work, to become a missional community, a group of people who are united by a purpose. They share in a purpose. They have a mission together. And so the church in Acts demonstrated this. They appointed deacons. The first deacons were appointed to serve tables because they were trying to take care of the widows. And that was like a full-time job. And they're like, we got to do this more efficiently. We got to make sure everyone gets taken care of. No one gets left out. So they actually said, hey, we're taking sign-ups. We're going to appoint some people. And so they had a whole system in place. Whenever apostles would travel to different churches, they'd take offerings and gifts to bless those churches that were maybe encountering hardships or in famines and so forth. The apostles' letters repeatedly remind the churches to serve each other, to take care of each other's needs. They say there should be no needs among you because you should be taking care of it. Because our mission is to participate in what Jesus is doing to restore justice to the world. When we serve the least of these, we're inverting the power structures. We're inverting the way that we've been told the world works. And we're actually resisting the works of Satan. We're resisting the powers that be, and we're restoring justice to the world. So it's a pretty big mission. It's pretty important. And so we want to talk about how to practically do this. Now, I'm going to put up the picture again because I think this is so, so important. Anytime I talk about here's practically what to do, we've got to avoid two ditches. You want to stay on the road. You don't want to fall off into the ditch. So we don't want to serve out of obligation. We're not trying to earn God's favor. This is not how you get in good with God. Now, this is a way that you can get closer to God, and so it's a good thing to do, right? But we don't want to get stuck in the trap of thinking, oh, this is the way to please God. Well, faith is the way to please God, and this is the way of putting faith into action, but it's a way, it's not the end-all be-all. And so we don't want to get stuck in a cycle where we just try harder and harder and harder to earn God's favor, because that'll turn into legalism and it'll put us in the ditch. And on the other hand, if we say, well, I believe in God, and that's all I need, we can fall into the other ditch that I'm alliteratively calling lackadaisical. This is what the Apostle James says. If a brother and sister is poorly clothed and lacks daily food, and one of you says to him, go in peace, keep warm, and eat well, but you do not give them what the body needs, what good is it? So also faith, if it does not have works, is dead, being by itself. So we want to actually put our faith into action. We actually want to do things, and we want to do things in a life-giving, sustainable way, of course. We want to find that middle path. But service is love in action. This is what Apostle John says in 1 John 3:18. Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and truth. Let's not love by what we say, but by what we do. So let's talk about what it means to be a servant. Now, to Jesus' disciples, I think they had a little bit more context for this than some of us do. In that world, there were a lot of servants. In fact, a lot of the hearers of Jesus' message were already servants of some rich guy or another, right? In any case, they were very familiar with the system, with the expectations, with the role. And in our culture, probably for better, we don't have a whole lot of servants. I think the closest thing I can think of is if you go to a restaurant, you know, service industry workers are expected to kind of act like a servant in a specific context for a specific role, right? That's the closest thing we have in our context. And so treat your service workers well. And actually, you know, if you've been one, you probably understand a little bit better of what Jesus is going to be talking about. Now, when we serve and get enthusiastic and I'm going to do great things for the kingdom, and there's some ways that we can kind of trip over our shoelaces and encounter some struggles. And I've done all of these, and I've seen many people do many of these, and so I want to talk about this briefly, because if we're going to actually put our faith into action, it would be great if we didn't fall into the ditch. The first thing I want to mention is, and this is my worst trait, is having a savior complex. When I see a need, only I can save them. I have talents, I have skills, and I will solve this. The problem here is that we do not really understand what people need as much as we like to think we do. This is so common in our culture of, well, these people just need this. Well, if you've ever talked to a social worker, they can tell you things can be really complicated. It's rarely that simple. The thing that they just need may be impossible for them to get for other reasons. We don't want to come in and parachute in and say, I will solve all your problems, and then hi-ho silver away, you know. It's also really important that people ask for help. Sometimes people don't want help, and when you try to help someone who doesn't want help, I have never had that go well. So, you know, now that doesn't mean you have to wait until someone gets up the courage to ask you. You can let them know that you're available. You can say, I would really like to help you with this if you'd be okay with that. But you need their permission to help them. Otherwise, you're not helping. You're not acting like a servant. You're acting like something else, right? Servants do what they're asked to do, not what they think would be the best thing, right? They're not trying to be all superior and I'll give you what you really need. That's not going to be a good servant, right? So we don't want to have a savior complex. We can also take it too far. We can say, start helping someone with something and see another need and just keep on going and try to solve all of someone's problems. We're not God. We can't handle all that many problems. You're just going to burn yourself out. So we don't want to have a savior complex. Another thing is lacking boundaries. It's important to know what you can and can't do if you're serving someone. When you overextend yourself, you're not going to successfully help them anyway. So maybe it's good to know where your limits are and to communicate appropriately about those. Sometimes people will ask you for things. And, you know, people call the church all the time saying, can I get, you know, rent assistance? And I have to tell them, I'm really sorry. We don't have a rent assistance funds. We just don't have that kind of money. Here's what we do have. We have food and we have clothing. And if you would like to come in, we would love to give you those things. And I hope that that helps you to save some money so you can put it towards rent. That's what we can do. That's what I have to offer. And I can only give you what I have, right? So having boundaries is pretty important when you're serving people. And it's important to be really clear and upfront with those so that you're not leading people on, don't promise something you can't do, etc. Other pitfalls, having a condescending attitude. Man, this is so easy to get, because what happens is we think, oh, I'm a good person for serving the poor. Bless me. Oh, here you go. I'm so glad I was able to give you this, right? This is an easy attitude. And it's, what's funny is you don't start there. You start with a genuine motivation to help. And you just want to see people helped. And sometimes you can just start falling into this mode where, ah, yes, those poor people, we try to take care of them. Now, here's the thing. If you're a servant in the first century, you don't say, oh, yes, yes, master, you poor thing. I will take care of your every need. Don't you worry, you poor little baby, right? That's not an attitude that will keep you hired, you know? That's not the attitude we want to have. In fact, Paul reminds the Philippians of this. He says, instead of being motivated by selfish ambition or vanity, each of you should, in humility, kind of a key thing there, humility, be moved to treat one another as more important than yourself. When you're serving someone, you've got to recognize that you're putting yourself in a position where you're placing more importance on their needs. So we want to be careful about our attitudes. Another thing that can happen, I realize there's a lot of different ways to go wrong with serving, is what I realized when I put this together. And again, I've done all of these, is you can get judgmental of the other servants. A lot of times I'll get annoyed because you're not doing that right. And why are you doing this and not that? And, you know, that's my job. Stay out of my zone. This is my zone, right? We can get territorial. Here's what Paul says in Romans. Who are you to judge another servant? Okay, what's he talking about? Well, we're all servants of God. He's the master. We're the servants, right? Are you going to judge his servant? No, that's his job, right? To their own master, servants stand or fall, and they will stand, for the Lord is able to make them stand. Interesting. So be careful. Now, it's if you want to come alongside someone and encourage them and show them what works for you, that's wonderful. That's working as a team, but to get territorial about, well, this is my zone, keep out, is a dangerous thing. When we serve, a lot of times we can do it for the accolades, for the recognition, to be seen as good. But Jesus reminds us, be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. We can be serving to get the credit for it, and then when no one's looking, maybe we don't feel like serving. But part of being a servant is attending to needs even when it goes overlooked. And it's not fun to be overlooked. We try to acknowledge the people who show up and serve. We try to do a good job of that around here, and we don't always. But many of you have been faithful servants for years and years and years, and you're probably more expert at this than I am. And so I just want to give that recognition right now and also remind you that sometimes we don't get that recognition, and that has to be okay. Because, and most importantly, the reason we serve cannot be for our own self-worth or fulfillment. In other words, it's not about you. Once upon a time when I was in Alabama, I started volunteering for this inner city organization and helping with their after school program. And so it was a wonderful experience. It was transformative. And the first time I went, I didn't know what to expect and got to push kids on the swing. And it turns out that's a really big deal for them because they just needed someone to show them just the tiniest bit of attention. And I volunteered. It was exciting. Met people. They were into the mission. They loved Jesus. It was so good. I went home and I went, that was awesome. And the next week I went, it was the same thing. And I got back. That was great. I love doing this. And the third week I woke up and I'm like, I'm so excited to go. I'm going to feel so good about this. And I went and it was fine. It was weird. I didn't really get the warm fuzzies. Nothing bad happened. It was just kind of like ho-hum, you know? I didn't really feel like I experienced the presence of God in a powerful way. I don't feel like I got to have a transformative conversation with someone. I was just there and doing my thing and helping as I had the opportunity. And I went home, and I'm driving home. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to do this anymore. God, why did I have such a great experience the first couple of weeks, and this week is just not. And that's when God reminded me, says, well, this isn't about you. Are you going to serve because you actually want to follow me and love people? Or are you serving to make yourself feel good? And wow. Wow, has that ever been a massive impact on my life? The thing is, if you're looking to the practice of serving to be fulfilled, you may be looking in the wrong place. Now, often you will find Jesus in service. Often that's where you'll encounter him in powerful ways that you won't in other ways. But if if we start by spending time with Jesus, these practices of Sabbath and solitude, that's where we have to be rooted. That's where we have to find our fulfillment. If we're looking to service for self-worth, I'm valuable because I did something valuable, then we're going to get burned out. We're not going to be successfully following Jesus. But if we get our self-worth by sitting in the presence of Jesus, letting him tell us how he sees us, let him share the Father's love with us, then we won't be serving for our self-worth. But we might find that to be something that's very rewarding at the same time. See, we can encounter Jesus in service, and service can develop Christ-like characteristics in us. But it's not the only place for that, or even the main place with that. You know, for a long time, I had a hard time simply attending church. I would get antsy. I'd sit in the back row and, you know, not sure what to do with my hands. And I feel more comfortable with the keyboard in front of me or a soundboard in front of me or something like that, you know. That's, you know, gives me a place to be. I feel like I've got my spot and I know what to expect. And then I can engage with God during that service to the extent that, you know, I feel like it. But when I'm just sitting there by myself, what do? And God had to teach me how to just sit and be in his presence, to not have to be doing something, to not be looking for the thing I'm doing to be where he shows up, but to simply come to him and let him show up without anything in between. Such a critical thing to learn if we want to be servants. It's when to step up and work, but also when to just stand and listen and be in his presence. So that's a lot about how not to serve and how it's important for us. There's one question we need to answer today. But how? Thank you. How? Well, one of the obstacles to serving is often, where do we even start? And so the best place to start is to start small. So many times people get fired up for Jesus and want to change the world, and they imagine this expansive organization where they transform everything. No, we're going to start small. Galatians says, "You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love." We're just trying to serve one another humbly in love, and that means through the smallest things you can imagine. Maybe that means that you pick up the plates for a family member at the end of dinner. Maybe that means that you hold a door, right? Maybe it means you pour a drink for somebody. You can start really, really small, but the point is to start noticing those opportunities, because the smaller opportunities will lead you to bigger opportunities. Once you start becoming aware of people's needs, then you'll see the bigger ones as you come across them. Now, when we look at our community, it can work the same way. And starting small might just be giving a burger to the homeless guy on the side of the road. That might be the small thing that you can do this week. And that's important. That's a key part of this practice, is to not try to say, well, I'm valuable because I did all this. I'm such a great servant. No, you did the one thing. That's your spiritual practice. That's your stepping stone. That's how you take a step closer to Jesus. And then maybe you'll take another step and another step. But we don't have to do everything. But as we do start caring about our community, we'll start noticing that there are some pretty big needs out there. And so the next step is that you can simply research these needs. It turns out you can call people and ask them, hey, what's the needs in your community? We had the Associate National Director for Evangelism and Justice speak to the area pastors a few weeks ago. And he's like, did you know you can just call the chief of police or the mayor, email them and say, hey, what's the biggest needs you see in our community? They're literally paid to answer that email. That's their job. They will tell you. They will tell you what the needs are. You can go to the library. You could research the demographics. And you can research what organizations are already making a difference. You know, it's crazy to me how many times I've talked about a need and someone says, oh, I know, we'll get a bunch of money. We'll get a bunch of volunteers. We'll just whole organization. And I'm like, whoa. There's only like three organizations that do this. Why don't we just join one, right? Starting a new organization is rarely the answer. And if it is, even if it is, you should start by getting experience in adjacent areas of service. And then, so we're starting small, we're researching, we're becoming aware, and the next step is simply to say yes. Now, there's a point at which you can't say yes to everything. It's important to know your boundaries, to know your limits, right? But there's also a point at which sometimes just say yes to things and see where it leads. Don't say yes to long-term, permanent commitments. We're talking about small, limited things. See an organization that's doing something interesting? Hey, could I volunteer there for 4 weeks, for 6 weeks? I'm not going to make a long-term commitment. I just want to get to know the organization better, the need better. I want some experience in serving. Try things out. You don't have to make the long-term commitments at this stage. The point is to learn what's going on and to get experience, to get practice serving, to get a little insight into whether this is something that is your long-term calling or it's maybe interesting and informs that decision, but you're going to go a different way. And finally, be interruptible. Jesus gets interrupted constantly. He's teaching and someone comes up to him and interrupts him. Hey, can you heal my daughter? She's dying. And so he's okay. So he's going there and then all of a sudden a woman comes up and touches him and gets healed. He's like, oh, hi, you're here. And he's interrupted from his interruption, you know. At one point he was going away from the crowds to pray and they all ran around the long way and caught up to him. And he's like, okay. All right. He's interruptible. So I think if we cultivate some interruptibility, we'll encounter some great opportunities. I think most importantly, when it comes to service, the most important thing you can do is to show up. You can't serve where you're not at. And it's been interesting. I've noticed that there's a lot of people who wait for a formal invitation to serve. They're waiting for someone to put them on a schedule somewhere. Maybe they kind of mentioned that they might be interested in something, and they're waiting for you to say, yes, you are selected because you are so wonderful and awesome, and we desperately need you. If you're waiting to be desperately needed, the people who desperately need you don't have the time to tell you that you're desperately needed, okay? Plus, that's not a good motivation anyway. It's not about you, right? So don't wait for the formal invitation. See where people are serving and show up. Show up. Once you're there, what do? You're not on the schedule. No one's expecting you to do anything. That's okay. That's okay. Take a look around. Be observant. That's the thing about servants, is that a servant would have this observation. A good servant in that culture would be very aware of their master's needs. They would see that his cup was empty and they would fill it, right? Have you ever been to a restaurant where the service is awesome and your like glass is just never empty and you never think about it? You're like, wow, it's weird. I keep sipping out of this glass and it's always full and I didn't even see the person, right? That's impressive table service, right? But that's the kind of attitude we want to have, is we want to see those needs, become aware of them. And not that you want to show up for the first time somewhere, not that you want to jump in and just go nuts, right? We want to be careful. We want to be aware. Is someone else handling that? And they're doing fine. I just need to give them space. Or if someone overwhelmed, I can say, hey, would it be okay if I helped you with that? We want to ask gently if we can ask, right? We don't want to hijack what someone's doing. Someone's got a system. We don't want to get involved with that. But we do want to be directable and teachable and say, I'm noticing that this seems to be a little bit crazy. Is there some way I can help? Would I be able to carry these things? Would I be able to do this, right? The thing is, we want to become aware, we want to have that eyesight. There's so many times where I've seen volunteers. I've been one of the volunteers. I've been clueless as a volunteer. I've shown up and I've been like, I'm here to help, but if you don't need me, I'm happy to look nice, you know? It's fine. And meanwhile, there's people who are scurrying around just trying to stay on top of things, and I'm oblivious, right? There's so many things that are there to do if you have the eyes for it. For instance, the number of times I've seen trash on the floor and a bunch of people stand around doing nothing. Like I said, I was one of those people. But after working in the inner city ministry, where half of everything I did was pick up trash, because, oh my gosh, there was so much trash everywhere. It's like I was constantly, every time I went somewhere, I wound up picking up trash on the way and throwing it away and picking up trash on the way back. And now I can't unsee it, right? You got to develop the site. Sometimes there's a need. At one point, I volunteered. I've told the story before. The college group was told, if you help with the youth retreat, if you help serve pizza at the youth retreat, we need a couple of people to help. And of course, the entire college group heard pizza, and so the entire college group showed up to serve pizza. And I got there, and well, you don't need 18 people to open a pizza box. You know what I'm saying? So we're all just standing there, and then my friend Anna came a little late, and she walks up and sees the crowd of people just standing there behind the pizza boxes and goes like this, whoa. And I was like, ah, I guess there's plenty of us, whatever. And she disappears, and the next thing I know, I'm like, where'd she go? She discovered that even though there's a bunch of us who volunteered to help with pizza, no one noticed there's one lady trying desperately to fill drinks for like 100 students that are all lining up. And so she just came over and started pouring drinks. She didn't like get someone's permission. She didn't like make it. She just started doing it, right? But she saw that there was that need because she was actually looking to serve. She was actually having the attitude as a servant. When you're serving, you want to show up. You want to observe and become aware. Bring someone with you, right? Bring someone into it. And then we want to listen. It's kind of goes along with watching. We also want to listen. Again, we don't want to have the savior complex. I see your problem, right? You see what might be their problem. You see an opportunity. You don't know that you have the solution yet. Because we want to put the focus on the person we're serving. We want to ask them, hey, would this be helpful to you? What do you need? How are you doing? We want to actually care for them as a person, not just as a, oh, I can get my star today, right? We also want to listen to Jesus, because a lot of times, if we take a moment, instead of rushing in to help, if we say, hey, Jesus, that looks like an opportunity. Is there anything you would like me to do in specific, right? Sometimes Jesus will show us things about people, show us that they are stressed and they need someone to bring peace into their life, not someone to bring anxiety, right? Sometimes he'll show us that they're sad and need comfort, right? So when Jesus shows us things, that's an opportunity for us to meet their needs, not just physical, but spiritual. And that's a really, really powerful thing. So listen to the person you're serving and also to Jesus. And my final point here is serve the least of these. This means that we have to confront our biases and see the individual. We have to see Jesus in that individual. When we serve, we're reminded by Paul that we're not serving just that person, but he says, whatever you do, work out with all your heart is working for the Lord, not for human masters. We want to see Jesus in that person and say, we're doing this work to serve Jesus. Because it turns out when we're serving people, they're not always great people. They're certainly never perfect. We can start thinking, well, they're kind of a mess, and I only want to put a little bit of energy into this. I don't know if this is worth it. But we're serving Jesus himself by serving the people. In fact, that's what Jesus literally says in Matthew 25. He says, the king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. We don't get to judge the master, right? Which means when we're serving someone, we need to give them the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes we've got the food pantry, we're serving, people are coming in. We see a really fancy car drive in and someone come in for food, right? And it's easy to be like, they got a nice car. They don't need this. They're taking it, right? But you don't know the story. You don't know if they bought a car with the lease that they can't afford, immediately lost their job, and now they're drowning in debt. But that's all they've got left is that car, maybe, you know? We don't know. We got to check our stories. We got to realize that we can't see what else is going on. You know, what's interesting is for all the serving Jesus does and all the commands to serve, I have not found a single place in the whole Bible where he makes an exception for the undeserving. At no point does he say, serve one another unless they really don't deserve it. And no point does it say that, right? And yet, it's so easy to say, these people don't deserve it. Well, they don't meet this qualification. Well, politically, they differ from me. Well, I think that they should do it this way, and so I'm not going to serve them until they do things the right way, right? We don't get to judge the master. And if Jesus says that serving the least of these is how we serve him, then we don't get to judge that. So I hope that's a little bit of an encouragement for if you feel stuck and you're like, I've been serving in some ways, but I'd like to do more. I'd like to experience more of what God has to have. Or if you've never taken a step where you've really put yourself in a position where you can serve people, I hope this is an opportunity to try it out this week. I'm going to invite Marissa to come back up, and we'll do a song to close. But the practices that we've been talking about do all work together. It starts with a practice of Sabbath. It starts with being with Jesus. It starts with letting him form our heart through practices like fasting. And then when we've prepared ourselves by listening to him, by being in his presence, we can carry that presence and serve other people. And so these things work together in a beautiful cycle, because when we serve people, we encounter Jesus in those interactions. We're being with Jesus that way. It develops patience in us. It develops faithfulness and kindness in us. And so we're becoming like him through the practice of serving. So there's a wonderful cycle. We want to do it that way, though. We don't want to serve so that we can become good people, so that we'll get his approval. That's going the wrong way around the circle. And we'll put us in the wrong headspace, if you will. So all the practices work together to come closer to Jesus, which is what we're doing here. That's the whole point. So my tip this week is to look for one small thing that you can do. It could be for someone in your family. It could be for a stranger. A lot of power in asking Jesus to just open your eyes every day. Let me see the stranger. Show me one thing I can do today. Show up. You know, we're having a restock this Tuesday. That's a great opportunity to show up. It's an awesome time to show up. So there's plenty of work to be done, and all you have to do is right here. But you can also take a look at lots of other amazing organizations in our city: ATV, Realities for Children, Convoy of Hope. I'm thinking of the house, Habitats for Humanity. Yeah. Lots of these organizations have walk-on volunteering opportunities, too. You can just check it out and see what they're up to. You'll learn some things. When you serve someone, it's important to reflect on the experience, but don't judge yourself by how fulfilled you felt. Don't say, well, that made me feel good, or that made me feel bad. Right? That's steering your heart towards the wrong motive. Instead, ask God what he wants to form in you. What came up? What did I learn about myself? Do I need to learn patience? How can I learn patience, God? How can I learn to listen better? Ask God, are you pleased with my service?